Good morning. This is Chair Evelyn Velez for the Senior Citizens Engagement Committee. And first of all, I want to thank whoever took my place for me last Tuesday or last Thursday when I missed the meeting. Was that you, Elizabeth, who yes. Thank you very much. I really appreciate it. You know, we were supposed to fall back 1 hour. Somehow I fell back one whole day. I remember the next day. So thank you very much for filling in and for extending the online meetings. Sherry, would you please give us the Pledge of Allegiance today?
Sure. Everyone can repeat after me. I pledge allegiance to the
flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands.
One nation, under God,
indivisible,
with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, thank you, Desiree. You are very handy with the flag. And you didn't even do honor patrol, I bet, when you were a kid. Elizabeth, would you please do the roll call?
All right, Tony Alavado.
I'm here.
Elizabeth Busick, present. Carol Downey. Nope. Scott Fegg. Nope. Elaine Genoway. You're on mute, Elaine. Sherry Horn.
Here.
Carolyn Inman. Nope. Jim Levy.
Here.
John Poynter. Well, he was here for a bit ago.
His box is there.
And Elizabeth, you got me, right, Elaine?
I did.
Okay, thank you.
And he's our speaker, so let's say he's there.
Okay, all right. Tony Rodella.
Hurrah.
Dave Tetzlock.
Here.
Evelyn Velez.
Here.
And Paulo Morales. Oh, he's been absent for the last five meetings. In fact, he has never attended one meeting.
No,
okay, and we have a quorum.
Mm-mm. Okay, thank you very much, Elizabeth. I will make all of the introductions, which is of everybody who's already been on the roll call, plus Desiree and Lillian. Hello, and good morning to you too. All right, we have a presentation. We have a presentation today by John Poynter, and Tony Rodella is going to do an introduction. Excuse me, I have a cold. But I think he is on the phone or something right now. He is, his little box is dark. So let me give him a few moments and why don't we do the action item AB361 while we're at it? Review and make findings required by Government Code subsection 54953E3. Recommendation is to continue virtual meetings due to the proclaimed state of emergency arising from COVID-19. As meetings in person present imminent risk to the health and safety of attendees, and the emergency continues to directly impact the ability of members to meet safely in person. Is there a second for that action?
Second.
I think Elizabeth.
That's fine.
Desiree, would you please do a roll call? I mean, a vote.
Of course. Tony Alavado.
Yes.
Elizabeth Busick.
Yes.
Carol Downey. Scott Feig. Elaine Genoway.
Aye.
Sherry Horn.
Aye.
Jim Levy.
Yes.
Paulo Morales. John Poynter. Tony Rodella.
Aye.
Dave Tetzloff.
Aye.
Evelyn Velez.
Yes. Let me just send John a quick chat. Okay. Desiree, how was that vote?
That is a majority vote, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. Well, now we see John's picture, but I'm not sure he's still with us.
John's on twice.
Yeah, he's on twice, so there's a little problem there. Okay, so while he works that out, can we go to the subcommittee report? Dave, do you have, I know we just met on this, but do you have an update on the digital? Here's John, but let's continue with Dave. Do you have an update on the digital divide subcommittee?
No, there's been no update on that.
Okay, thank you. And yeah, I don't know. They talked in the meeting the other day about when they were having a determination on the grants, but I missed that. I guess the grants will be awarded or decided. Lillian or Desiree, do you know, will that be this calendar year before December?
Yes, the grant has been awarded, and we did, they're currently in the process of working out the state contract. They're currently going through that right now with SSA. So, and then we're, of course, we have an MOU with SSA. So shortly, maybe next month, we'll probably have an update.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, and the Elder Abuse Subcommittee, excuse me, likewise has not met in the last month, so we don't have an update on that. Is there anybody who has any questions about either subcommittee? All right. Okay, well, let's go to our presentation. Tony Rodella, would you please introduce our special guest today?
Oh, okay, it'd be my pleasure. John Pointer was about 6 years ago was elected chair of the California Senior Legislature. At that time, we were having an enormous amount of chaos in that our funding was almost non-existent. It was on the verge of collapsing. John's hard work and diligence and know-how, he was able to secure funding from the permanent funding from the state legislature. Nobody had ever been able to do that, but John accomplished that. So, what else can you say? He saved CSL, and we're going strong. And under his leadership, that's what has been accomplished in the last 6 years. John Pointer.
And can I ask everybody to mute except for John?
I would just like to say, it's incredible what John has accomplished for CSL. I mean, I don't know of anybody else who could have done it. I mean, he is incredible.
Well, I'll throw in some accolades because apparently John isn't really live there. Right. It's a picture. Also, and say that he's one of the first people I met and was really so much full of information.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
And
direction. Thank you.
I was quite impressed. John, are you there now?
I am, but can you hear me, Evelyn?
Yes, we can hear you now.
Okay, well, we're certainly having technical difficulties here.
Well, you are signed on.
Okay.
Twice. You're Jason.
Thank you. I don't have a very good connection, so I'm using my... What's that, Evelyn?
I didn't say anything, but we really can't hear you. Can you see us?
Apparently can't even hear us.
Yes, let me.
Well, do you want to work on that a little bit again?
And John, it might work if you turn your camera off. The connection might be a little better. And I did receive your slides I can share those for you while you speak if we can get your audio, but maybe just turning the camera off will improve it a little bit.
I think his camera was off, Desiree.
It was now showing on. It looked now like it was blocked. When it's blacked out like that, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's off because I can see it on my end and it shows that it's on.
Oh.
So
another option too is maybe you need to reboot your router. It probably takes 5 minutes for it to get back on. So
I love your ceiling. Okay, while John is struggling with that, let's go back to the rest of our agenda. Tell me when you come back in, John. Announcements and roundtable discussion. I know John has an announcement. Is there anybody else who has some announcements for today?
We haven't discussed okay. Seven.
Did I hear a voice? No. Okay.
We haven't discussed item seven.
I have my agenda is not the current one. So which is seven, the legislative tracking?
No, it's chair items, new business.
Yes, I figured we would go back to that if we, because that would take a little bit longer. Okay, so we've done action items, subcommittee, legislative tracking will be John. New membership, no new membership, announcements and roundtables. Again, other than John, were there any announcements we wanted to make today? Anybody a veteran? Dave, happy, and Jim, happy Veterans Day. I hope you got a free meal at Denny's.
They're coming up, so.
Desiree, is it okay if I do public matters right now?
Yes, that's fine.
Okay, are there any members of the public?
We do have members of the public.
Okay, so at this time, members of the public may address the council regarding any items within the subject jurisdiction, provided that no action is taken on off-agenda items unless authorized by law. If you would check with the audience, I would appreciate
it. Yes, we did not receive any requests in advance. There are members of the public present. If you would like to address the committee, please use the hand raise icon or press *9 and I will unmute you. And seeing no hands, Chair.
Okay, thank you. And this is looking very promising. I see a moving picture of John. Can we hear you?
Let's see.
Yes, look at that. All right. Okay, John, unfortunately, you missed all of the nice things that were said about you, but you have been introduced quite warmly. And Desiree says she has your slide presentation. Everybody else, please mute. And John, you have the floor.
Thank you. I apologize for the technical difficulties. What I wanted to do today was give you an idea of CSL. The first slide is merely California Senior Legislature. The next slide is our mission. And it outlines for you what our mission is: to help preserve and enhance the quality of life for older Californians and their families. We do this through legislation, and an additional component is now also working through the budget process. Some of you may have seen the recent release by the Legislative Analyst Office alerting us that they're projecting a budget shortfall for 2023. And we will wait to see the governor's budget that is released in the first week, usually, of January to see what the Department of Finance projections are. So more to follow in regards to that. Next slide, Desiree, a CSL snapshot. this gives you an overview of our organization. Created in 1979, we lowered the age to 55, and it mirrors the state legislature in terms of 40 state senators and 40 state assembly members. We're referred to as senior assembly member and senior senator. And then the two small pictures there are us in the Senate and Assembly chambers. No other senior organization has access to the Senate and Assembly chambers. We haven't either since the pandemic. So we're anxiously awaiting to see what happens here in 2023. So we've been conducting our business virtually and actually gotten quite good at it. Next slide, Desiree, is the organizational structure. I'm acknowledging that these pictures are dated. However, it gives you, more importantly, a sense. So what is the structure for CSL? We're an extremely small organization. We have one permanent employee and one temp. That employee is a state employee. We often get confused with nonprofits. We are not a nonprofit. We are a state agency, and we use our tax-exempt state agency status to participate in the tax checkoff. So that's where the confusion, I think, arises many times. So there's a joint rules committee that acts as the executive board, and there is a legislative committee. And those two organizations execute our business. The executive board deals with the many administrative matters associated with running the organization, and the Ledge committee primary mission is marketing or promoting our legislative proposals during the months of January and February. Next slide, Desiree, is legislative accomplishments. So over 200, I believe it's somewhere between 215 and 220 now, have been signed into law by the governor between our stand-up and the current year. Six CSL-sponsored bills made it to the governor's desk this year. Three were signed into law. And that's quite an accomplishment. We're very proud of that. We hope to attempt to replicate that in 2023. The next slide gives you a idea of where to find our legislative proposals over the 2001 to 2016 time period. Our members use this for research, trying to identify what has been submitted in the past. Did it get picked up by a legislator? If not, maybe that's something we want to resurrect. The next slide is 2022 CSL legislative results. Here are specifically the bills that were submitted to the governor sitting on his desk, and the three highlighted in red are what were signed by the governor. AB 2077 is the fifth attempt on the part of CSL to increase the personal needs allowance. We did not resubmit that this year. However, we're under the impression Assemblymember Reyes out of the Inland Empire is considering pursuing this. So we'll see if it's resurrected yet again. I was surprised SB 842, which is basically a pilot, didn't get signed into law by the governor. And same thing with the scholarship program, with all of the emphasis on in-home care services. So the next slide is 2023 CSL legislative priorities. This is the outcome of our recent annual session in which we come together as an organization and identify our legislative priorities for the coming year. We commonly refer to this internally as our top 10. And this is what we then use to interact with legislators in the January and February time period to see who would be interested in authoring one of our proposals. The rumor is four of our bills have already been picked up. We're not prepared to share that yet because that came from a legislative aide, not the leg director. So we're attempting to validate that. That is the result of us conducting a Zoom meeting with legislative staff members in which each of the CSL legislative authors had an opportunity to present their bill, their proposal to those in attendance and allow a Q&A to then occur and give the CSL author the maximum exposure and opportunity to market or promote their bill. So that's an exciting development for us. We're very interested in continuing to do that in the future and market that even more extensively. But it's a great opportunity for CSL authors who obviously have a pride of ownership to be able to communicate directly with legislative staff members on what they're trying to do with their specific legislative proposal. Next slide, Desiree. So after we have proposals authored by legislators, the advocacy piece kicks in. We use the position letter portal through our CSL headquarters to submit our letters of support, secure letters of support from other organizations. And this is an excellent tool for you as a private citizen to express your support for a specific piece of legislation impacting seniors. Many of you will recall that in the past, I've had a slide presentation that specifically walks you through how that position letter portal works. And I'm prepared to do that again in the first quarter of 2023. It again, as a reminder, you as a SCAC member are using this process as a private citizen, not referring to yourself as a SCAC member. You are providing a letter of support as a private citizen. CSL members typically rely on CSL to generate letters of support from headquarters. We go out with what we call calls for action, in which we ask members to utilize the system to provide their support. So we will alert CSL members when we need their involvement. The beauty of this is that the letter of support only needs to go in once. It rides along with the bill as it moves along through committee. So it's no longer a process where you have to individually submit hard copies of letters through the system each time the bill arrives in a different committee. So it's really, really a significant improvement. The next slide is how to create an account in the portal. I imagine you can't read it, but remember, I'm going to go back in the first quarter of 2023 and present again how to register, and how to utilize the system. This is just an intended to make you aware, again, of the fact that there is a electronic process in place that allows you to generate letters of support that, again, follow that specific bill through the entire committee process, as well as the floor votes. The next slide is Senior Rally Day. This is yet another continuation of the CSL legislative process. The process begins in January when a CSL member comes up with an idea for a proposal, prepares the proposal, submits it to CSL headquarters by the deadline in June, and then that document is sent to the Legislative Council office, where they use interns overseen by full-time staff to perfect a legislative proposal into a bill format. It's a great training tool for potential members of legislative council in the future. And it really is a unique opportunity for CSL to interact with Ledge Council, because when we meet in person, Ledge Council supports us in the annual session process, as they do also when we meet virtually. Those proposals that are in a bill format when returned in August are what we then use to begin the process of building up to our annual session, where we meet and vote on what proposals we want to represent us as our priorities for the coming year. And then again, the process of finding an author and the legislative session process begins, where you have committees reviewing bills and voting. And in effect, our goal is to clear the legislature by June 30th. And that doesn't necessarily always happen, but the session concludes in August, and then it winds up in the governor's desk, and we're ultimately seeking the governor's That's the process. In there, in May, is the Senior Rally Day. Senior Rally Day is used by us to advocate in a statewide environment where participants are invited across the state to meet with representatives that involve the Master Plan for Aging, but also in the afternoon with legislators or their staff on specific bills that relate to older Californians, and in effect communicating our wishes, our support for that specific legislation or for that specific budget item. The last 2 years have been unique in that we've had a substantial surplus and funding hasn't been an issue. It appears funding will be an issue again in 2023. To what extent, we're not sure yet, so I'll have more to report in the future. So that's where Senior Rally comes together, and Senior Rally has really blossomed from a local event on the South Lawn of the Capitol, attended by senior stakeholders predominantly in the vicinity of the Capitol, to a statewide event where you can participate virtually and it's really been very interesting to see it grow from a pretty local event to a statewide event. The next slide is Friends of CSL. This is just a plug for CSL. It basically is an opportunity for those of you that want more information and want to be on a email directory, want to have access to CSL members, this kind of thing, you're welcome to enroll in CSL. Anybody that registers for Senior Rally Day is enrolled as a friend of CSL. So we're up at about 500 members at this point in time. Funding. So Tony alluded to this earlier. I just wanted to speak to this a minute, just so people understand the uniqueness of CSL. As a state agency, prior to 2019, we received no general funding. We had a state employee and a temp that were funded entirely out of donations. A little scary. At over the course of our tenure on the tax checkoff, approximately 40 years, we normally ran around $300,000 in donations. It takes $250,000 to remain on the tax checkoff. That's the minimum amount. In the early 2010s, we experienced a 80% decline in tax checkoff funding. And since that information is maintained, donor information is maintained by the Franchise Tax Board, it's protected under the Right to Privacy Act. We don't have a clue who donates to us. So we had to do something. And we submitted a proposal to the legislature that basically said, we have a state employee and we have a state mission. We believe that our administrative actions should be funded out of the general fund. And only the advocacy piece would be funded out of donations. That is a watershed moment for CSL, and it's significantly changed our financial picture. The next slide has simply to do, so this is how one makes a donation to CSL. On the Form 540, there's a easy and there's a standard form on the EZ, it's page 3. On the 540 standard, it's page 4. There are approximately 20, 22 organizations identified there that one can make a donation to using tax monies. If you're getting a refund, it's deducted from your refund. If you owe, it's added to the balance you owe. And that is then accumulated and subsequently distributed to the organizations that are participating. It's a unique concept. It's had its certainly highs and lows. At one point, there was over 30 organizations. We're down to about, again, like I said, 20 or 22 at this point. The last slide are questions. So that is a summary of CSL in a short period of time. I'm sure recount what I think everybody that is a member of CSL through the SCAC would experience is, that is, we didn't know what CSL was until we joined SCAC. The SCAC organization, the AAA statewide, are integral to the CSL organization. We interact with the state organization, C4A, which is basically a nonprofit created by the AAAs in order to represent them at the state level on a consolidated basis rather than individually. The C4A is who we interact with in terms of what legislation they're pursuing, what we're pursuing. We interact with the Commission on Aging, which is our counterpart. We were once one organization. 2006, we split off, and the commission does not have the legislative authority. We need to perfect a proposal.
John, you're...
They do not seek authorship. We interact a great deal with California Department and I hear of Justice and Aging. How's that? Evelyn, can you hear me?
Now we can, yes. Nope, I think you're frozen again.
How's that?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, sorry. I'm going to leave the phone static. I guess I got a little, I speak with my hands a little bit, and I think I started waving the phone around a little too much. So I was simply summarizing the various organizations we interact with, the Commission, C4A, the AAAs, the CDA, California Department of Aging, and also Justice and Aging, and last, a huge organization called the California Collaborative for Long-Term Services and Supports, which is, again, another organization that's very influential in the state of California. Evelyn, that's it. I'll turn it over for questions before I lose the connection again and see what kind of questions people may have.
Okay, thank you very much, John. Tony has just been dying to ask you this question. Jump in, Tony.
Yes. Hey, John. I have a couple of questions. One concerns the 2023 budget, which I had read that the state thinks it's going to have a deficit. Don't we have some type of rainy day fund that, you know, the state was in a budget surplus for several of the COVID years. So what happens?
Yes.
I mean, yeah, I don't know if you know
yes,
what
Tony.
Happened. Yeah,
there is a rainy day fund. It exceeds what they're projecting to be the shortfall. So what we have seen so far is the Legislative Analyst Office, which is part of the arm of the legislature, making their analysis. Now we're going to wait to see what the governor's organization, the Department of Finance, comes in with a budget in January. And then what portion of that rainy day fund they're going to allot to the shortfall and what programs they may delay. So rather than funding it in 2023, maybe they'll push it into 2024, that kind of thing. So the homeless program, for example, is one where Governor Newsom dedicated billions of dollars. I think we're waiting to see whether he's going to continue with that or whether, as one example, he will ask the Department of Finance to move those monies, a portion of those monies, into subsequent years in order to manage the revenue shortfall. If you know, the shortfall actually exists in the amount that has been projected. Remember, they underestimated the budget surplus significantly the last 2 years. And then when they actually wound up with the real figures, it was a significantly larger. So they don't have a stellar track record in terms of predicting what the actual amount is going to be.
Yeah, it was just sort of a gratuitous comment. I mean, the top 5% of the state taxpayers, you know, they pay most of the tax, and those folks are making a lot of money. So probably my guess would be we're going to collect more money than we suspect. The second question I had concerns that bill to raise the $35 up to whatever we were asking for, 85. It should be over 100 if it, tracking the cost of living over the number of years. Was there some answer as to why that the governor did not sign that bill, or do they don't necessarily provide an answer? It just doesn't get signed.
We get a template, a letter that is basically says the same with a few minor word changes. And this one was related to the budget. The governor didn't feel the budget could afford the increase. Than that, if you go to Ledge Info, Tony, you remember the California system that you can go and track bills? Ledge Info, L-E-G-I-N-F-O. Just Google that. That will come up. And type in AB 2077. Then there's the toolbar across the top that will come up. And one of those is analysis. Click on analysis, and every committee has what they call a consultant. Every committee gets an analysis of the bills in front of them. Take a look at that. It's much more related to Medicare and the formula used to calculate what we get for Medicare than it is to a budget specific,
Well, that makes sense then. It comes from some other source. I don't know. The state sent me some money this month that I don't need, and I assume sent to a lot of other people who didn't really need that money, and it could be, directed to something something else. So anyway, that's another gratuitous comment.
Okay, thank you.
Been there before, Tony.
Tony Rodella, you had your hand up.
Yes, I think I'd add something to what Alvarado was talking about. About 4 years ago, I was on the state committee for long-term care. I brought up that raising the amount that the recipients receive, and there was a lot of pushback on that, especially from most of the senior organizations, saying that if we did that, then a lot of their programs would suffer because the money would be taken out of this big pot. And a lot of it, they were estimating like $4 or $5 billion a year. So there was a lot of pushback on that. And so I think they have more lobbyists up there that would fight for that. Yeah, it's a question of the other organizations not wanting it because it would take money away from them. That was the thing, when I was involved in the state committee 4 years ago. That's it.
Okay. Thank you, Tony. Jim. You're muted. Jim, you're muted. There you go.
Just for the sake of clarification, every bill that is submitted to the governor, one of three things happen. Number one, he signs the bill and it goes and it comes into law, or he vetoes the bill. And if he vetoes the bill, he has to submit a letter of veto that is submitted and is everyone can look at. And if he does neither, then the bill automatically becomes law. If he doesn't sign it, or if he doesn't veto it, it becomes law. That's my only point.
Okay, thank you. I took a little snapshot of your presentation on the 2023 legislative priorities. And I know you've talked about these in previous meetings, but could you refresh my memory, please, on SP2, which is the caregiver and first responder communication with persons suffering from dementia?
Yeah, this is a card. I want to say it's a size of 5x8, Evelyn, that Marin County has developed and is using to assist in the interaction with individuals who are suffering from dementia or other mental health. And the CSL representative is proposing that this would be funded by the state and introduced to all counties as a tool for first responders when they interact with individuals who are suffering from dementia or other mental illnesses. So
I just find it very interesting because considering how people are very particular about being labeled, that there would be this program, I guess, has been successful in Marin. I'm surprised there's been a sign up on it because it's voluntary.
You're losing me. I don't understand, Evelyn.
So the state card, well, the card that is currently being done in Marin, that is voluntary. People actually sign up for it. And I'm just saying that I'm surprised because of questions of privacy. And so just wondering how effective this program has been.
I don't have that stat for you, Evelyn. I can try and get that information in a subsequent meeting, but I don't have that information in front of me.
Okay, I wasn't trying to put you on the spot. I think it sounds like a really good concept. I'm just wondering how reluctant people will be to participate in it, but it sounds like a really good first step. Tony, yeah,
go ahead, Evelyn.
Tony Alabado, your hand is still up, but I'm just looking at your ceiling. Is that did you have something else? Okay, I'm thinking he did not have something else. Any other questions for John?
No, nothing else, Evelyn.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, great. Just take my hand. Do I take my hand off or somebody else take it off?
You have to take your own hand. You have to be responsible for your own hand.
It's the same thing that puts your hand up.
There you go. Okay, any other questions for John? Thank you, John. You are an amazing person. And it's been great hearing exactly how the CSL functions, and I congratulate you on your successes and the successes of the senior legislature. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you for the opportunity, Evelyn, to make people more aware of what CSL is and in what we do. And I look forward to the 2023 time period where we can provide more updates on our legislative priorities and keep you apprised of our progress as we, again, try to replicate our record from last year.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much. Okay. I'm going to go back to the agenda now. And I think we are at item number six, new business, which is to select January 2023 working meeting date and time. Now, we generally have the third Monday, but that is a holiday. That's Martin Luther King Day. I assume, Desiree, is that indeed a holiday for the state? Okay. So I wanted to get some input on you about what would be a good substitute date for that. Of course, it would have to be coordinated with the office staff. But do you have suggestions, Elizabeth?
Page 4 says that their next meeting is January 23rd. So it sort of contradicts, you know, it says one thing and then the other, we're going to vote on it.
Page 4. Oh, okay. Well, no, I guess that was the date that the staff selected, which makes sense. It's just the following week.
It's still something that the committee can decide on. It was a tentative because we normally, if there's a holiday, we'll just push it a day or the week after, or the week before. But you have, like, for example, the following month, there's two Mondays back to back. So that's kind of up in the air, unless it's something that you want to just decide for January. And once the new chair is selected, they can take on for deciding for February.
Well, I vote for January 23rd. I thought that was a good date.
Yeah. Okay, perfect. I do too. Eyes?
Aye.
Okay, perfect. Everybody? Nays? Let me just ask, nays? No? Okay, very good. So it'll be January the 23rd of 2023. And there will be, I guess at the executive SCAC meeting this month, there will be a discussion about chair for this subcommittee. Do you know is that correct, Elizabeth?
I think Elaine should talk about that.
Okay, sorry, Elaine?
Yeah, well, the chair of the standing committees is appointed by the SCAC chair. So, and one thing in our bylaws is that if you are on the executive board, you cannot be the chair of a standing committee. So all of the standing committees, since all of the chairs are now on the executive board, will need a new chair. And so Jean Hernandez, I believe has been or will be discussing it with current chairs to see if there's, where the interest lies. And also another little quirk in our bylaws is that if you are the chair of a standing committee, you also have to be a member of SCAC, because some of the standing committees do have and allow for members on the standing committees who are not SCAC members. So that is something that Jean will be working on.
Okay. So I was a little unclear about that. Is Jean currently the SCAC chair now, or is that on January that he becomes the chair?
He's currently the chair.
Okay.
And also, even if it were till January, I would still defer to him because he is, he will be taking over. So, but okay. He's the chair.
Okay. I'm just a little unsure about how that's going to work for January's meeting. I guess he will be in touch with somebody between now and then, because we don't have a December meeting.
Yeah. And who is the vice chair on this committee?
Elizabeth.
Okay, Elizabeth. So if there's no chair, then the vice chair or Jean can appoint someone or ask them to temporarily chair the meeting until a new chair is appointed.
Okay, thank you. And then the January meeting is a working meeting. And I thought we should just have a few moments to discuss things that have come up that you think you would want to put forward to the to SCAC as a recommendation, or at least for discussion. And the one that I remember is the presentation from the district attorney's office, who they said that some better coordination with APS would be very helpful, because APS has a lot of on the street knowledge, I guess, and background about what's happening in these situations, and they're not necessarily getting that information when it gets to the district attorney. Now, I don't know what the reason for that is. So it's kind of hard to make a recommendation without knowing what the reason would be, how we could make that any better. Sherry.
I was wondering if we could, who we would find out from, if even after the state of emergency goes away, if, because it's just logical and easy for a lot of our members, if we could continue meeting in a hybrid fashion. I don't know who we talk to about that, but I would definitely propose something like that.
I don't know.
Well, I know an individual hybrid meeting is a challenge staff-wise. Staff doesn't have the capability to do that. And when we had the hybrid meeting in November in Laguna Niguel, it was only because our city staff was able to, provide the technology for that to happen. So for meetings to be hybrid, but it does make sense. I mean, and I've said this all along, would be in favor of the standing committees to remain virtual and then the general SCAC meeting to be in person. But a lot of that not only is dependent on the governor, but is also dependent on county council's interpretation of what the governor says. So I do think we need more clarification on that. So that's my two cents.
Okay. Well, I guess that could certainly be one of the recommendations. John?
I'm not sure what, if there's a difference at the county under the Brown Act and under the state in Bagley-Keene, but CSL has been able, prior to the pandemic, CSL was able to conduct a virtual meeting as long as there was a public location in which the public could attend. The public never attended, but as long as we could provide a location for, so we simply elected a AAA location, that the Public Brown Act and under the county format. And like Elaine said, probably got a lot to do with what county council interprets as the provisions. Number two, for the agendas in January, February, and March, one of those dates, I'd like to try to get on the agenda to bring to the attention of the SCAC and the AAA leadership, a legislative proposal we're dealing with in regard
breaking up. John, you sound like you're underwater. John, unfortunately, we don't know what you just said.
Guardianship and adoption of grandchildren.
Yeah. So I missed the first part of that.
Is that better?
Yeah, that's better. I missed the first part of that.
Okay, well, I'm sorry. The communication.
Okay, and Evelyn, the issue that you brought up.
All I was saying is I'd like to try to get on the agenda in January, February, or March.
Evelyn, you're muted.
Well, somebody has to be. Thank you, John. Elaine, you were saying?
Yes, and I can't remember the name or the number of the bill, but I'm wondering if there's been any relief to that situation that you mentioned with APS and the district attorney's office in communication, because remember that bill that we supported, and actually it was generated out of Orange County to it was for multi-agency communication so that the different agencies weren't operating in silos, because you know there was the belief that they were protecting personal information, but there was able with this bill there was able to be some communication and cross coordination. So I wonder, it will be interesting, and we should find out if that has maybe addressed some of the challenges that the DA's office referred to.
Okay, I will send an email to the DA who came to that meeting and ask her for a little bit more information on it. So that I can forward it to this subcommittee and the chair, because it might be something that as a committee you want to bring forward next year in your recommendations.
I think we also need to look at elder abuse. I mean, there's many, unfortunately, there's different avenues for elder abuse, but one of the ones is through cybersecurity and scams. And I know there just needs to be increased education and monitoring. I had an example here in my own community where a woman called me at night. She had just been scammed out of considerable savings because the person called her. Now get this, told her that her Amazon delivery of a computer was held up and she needed to go get gift cards to pay for this. Well, she says, well, I don't have an Amazon account and I didn't order any computers, but she still did everything this person told her to do, including keeping her phone on in the purse, in her purse. So when she was at the bank and they thought something was suspicious and asked to help her, she said no. When she went to buy the gift cards and the sales clerk thought something was suspicious, she said no. It wasn't until after she had given this fraudster all the gift card numbers that then she called. So there's really little to be done. And in talking with our deputies, and this was probably about $5,000. It was right here. And it was someone who I had the presentation done about 2 months before this, and the deputies were standing in front of her telling her, and she still did this. And then when I was talking to the deputies, when I reported it, they had a situation in Mission Viejo where a woman was scammed out of $80,000. So somehow we need to get this message across. So I don't know, there just needs to be much more emphasis on it or education or something, but this can't keep happening because it's taking the life savings of seniors. And then it just compounds on all these other problems that spiral out of that. So that's what I have to add.
Some of these scammers are getting very, very good. We had our computer locked up and with a message, it looked like it came from Microsoft. And it said, you need to do such and such to unlock the computer. We had to take the computer back in. We didn't do it. We took the computer back in, and it was definitely, it took them a day before they could unlock this scammed malware in order that we could use our computer again.
Mm-hmm.
They were getting very good.
Yeah. something, not that we would do a presentation, but just for your personal information, something you may want to consider is called Backblaze. And I have that on my computer. So every night it's backed up to the cloud. And so if that happens, you know, I can get what was on my computer, everything that Backblaze. And it's a subscription. I think it's Backblaze.
Backblaze.
But it backs up your computer every night. You have to pay for it, but yeah, because I had that happen years ago, and it was something that looked like as an email I'd get every day from my assistant telling me what meetings we're having that day. And also, if you are on an email and if you hover over the from address in the email, hover over it, you may see that it actually came from a different address than what you're seeing.
Absolutely. Yeah. I do that too.
But I digress. We don't need to get into cybersecurity education right this moment.
But that is part of the elder abuse, there's the physical, emotional, and the financial and the cybercrime. And when we had the meeting with the four or three community center managers, that was one thing that they didn't spend a lot of time on with their community members. Don't have any notices or flyers or things of you know, what is elder abuse and how do you deal with it if you suspect that you or a friend is being abused. They do a little bit of the cyber crime sort of announcements, but even that's not all that regular. So that's just for the committee for January's discussion and planning for your goals. I just wanted to remind you of the things that we had discussed over the year that you might want to bring forward. Mm-hmm. Elizabeth.
I think we should prepare for that February meeting where we all get together. I mean, we don't want to look like a bunch of idiots. You know, like, we didn't do anything to get ready for it.
Yeah.
I think it's very important that we direct our focus on what we are going to contribute to that February meeting.
Agreed. That's why I wanted to bring up the topic. And in January, that is your opportunity to have more discussion about this, what recommendations you might want to make in the February meeting.
Yeah, because remember, then the February meeting gets formed into our priorities that's taken to the Board of Supervisors and where we're asking them to put resources.
Right. Okay.
And I'll bet I put sheets on.
Okay.
All right, just to follow up on Evelyn's comment, I noticed that our senior center, when the seniors go in, they're going in to socialize and to engage and to participate and to see their friends and socialize in the different activities and to do the cybersecurity or different things. Those are like programs that they sign up for to attend. So maybe we need to get the information to them in a different way. Just something to think about. Look at how people at your senior centers use the senior center and come in. Are they coming in so much to go to programs or more to socialize? And do we need to then tailor the delivery of information to a different way?
Yeah, because most of the senior centers actually do have newsletters that they put out. And so that's where I'm thinking that they can be doing some of this. And I did talk to Gene and he about the possibility of doing a newsletter that kind of prepares information that community center managers can just take and plug into their newsletters. So like if we did, we have all these great presentations. And so if there's a presentation on fraud and there are a few, you know, we can write a paragraph about what was the most important thing about that and what to do and what to look for. Just that they can take that little article and put it into their newsletters, and in elder abuse, that they can put a little advertisement in their newsletters. That's what I've been thinking of for this next year, but we'll see how that goes. But anyways, I just wanted to put a bug in your ear about the February meeting is coming up very quickly. You don't have a December meeting. January is your time to plan. Tony, you have your hand up and you're muted.
Come on. Okay, what was the date we agreed on for the January meeting?
Monday, January 23rd. It's just the following Monday after MLK.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Okay, well, I'm going to go back to the agenda then and just make sure I didn't miss anything. So that was item 7. We did the subcommittees, the legislative tracking, new membership, announcements, and roundtable public. So we are up to the adjournment. However, because we jumped all over the agenda, I just want to give you one last chance if there is anything that you want to discuss. Desiree, you know, I saw an email from John this morning asking to share something. Was that the presentation? Legislative priorities. He sent.
I shared that with the group prior to the meeting. It was just attachments to reference along with the PowerPoint.
Okay. All right. Great. Anything else? I got a top request from John. John is still here, but okay. Request time to speak on the issues of grandparents. Okay, that's for January that you're talking about, John?
Yes.
Okay, I will forward this on. Okay, perfect. All right. Well, I want to wish everybody a very happy holiday season, whichever holidays, combination of holidays you observe. I hope there's a lot of food and a lot of love in your life. And look forward to seeing you in January. Thank you very much for attending today.
Happy Thanksgiving. And-